Hello and welcome to Dyslexia Explored. I'm Darius Nomdaron, your host. And today I have a very interesting episode to bring to you. It's about dyslexia and diet, amongst other things. And we're going to talk about some left of center things that you maybe not thought about before. The guest today, she is a well-respected model, registered nutritionist, a podcast host, amongst other things. You're going to learn lots about her. It's going to be really fun to just explore this area of other things that can affect your dyslexia, your mental state, your health, how you live your life. I'm really excited to share with you this Sarah Ann Macklin's story. Sarah Ann, it's great to have you here and explore your dyslexia story.
Thank you. I am very excited to be here talking about all things dyslexia with you today.
So, can you give us a bit of a picture of where you're at now, what you're doing right now, before we wind back and sort of rewind to what happened before you discovered your dyslexia and what your wake-up call was with dyslexia and what your journey's been? So where are you right now? What's happening in your world right now?
Yeah, so where am I right now? So currently, there's a few things, I think, like maybe other dyslexics may relate to this. There's not just kind of one linear path. So I've kind of amalgamated a roster of different things that I'm working on. So you mentioned in your very kind introduction, I'm still modeling, although I did take a break, but I'm still modeling to this day. Alongside that, I have a podcast called Live Well, Be Well. We're one of the top European health podcasts. So anyone who is interested in nutrition, mental health, emotional well-being, emotional hygiene, anything around that, it's an amalgamation of storytelling mixed with expert-led research at the moment. So if that sounds like your thing, definitely check it out. It's on, you know, all of the streaming platforms like this one. Alongside that, I am the founder of a mental health organization as well called the Be Well Collective, which I founded about 5 years ago. And it predominantly started in the fashion industry and the creatives. And now we work throughout the whole of the UK for mental health. So our slogan is that every mind deserves to be well. So we host summits, we host workshops, mentoring, and there's a whole kind of roster of things as well. And alongside that, I am a writer as well. I write for quite a few different magazines and broadsheets regarding health and well-being. So yeah, so I guess an amalgamation alongside some public speaking, which I really enjoy, and definitely a barrier I've overcome from being a dyslexic. Now I enjoy it rather than fear it. So yes, I do
fantastic.
A few things.
yeah. And you have the gift of dyslexia, and we're going to explore your dyslexia story and just kind of trace how dyslexia has woven throughout your life. So yeah. What was life like before you discovered dyslexia? What was life like before then?
Yeah, so I think, I'm not sure who's listening to this who has dyslexia or maybe has a daughter or a son or a friend or someone who suffers with dyslexia, but I don't like saying the word diagnosed. So I found out I was dyslexic when
identified.
I was 23.
Identified. I like using the word identified.
Yeah.
I was identified with dyslexia when I was 35, you know?
It's interesting. Even like, yeah, I'm trying to think of a word that's really kind of empowering, because yeah, I'm still learning my lingo around talking around this, which I think is, and I also because I don't hear many people speak about it. So that's why. Yeah. So I guess I was blessed with dyslexia. Maybe it's a good one for me at 23 when I was doing I went back to university. So I stopped modeling for a bit and went back to university to do biochemistry and human nutrition. And before then, I don't want this to kind of sound like, oh, get the violins out, because it's not at all, but I always felt that I was very unintelligent until that point. I always felt that I was really lagging behind. I always seemed to have very good kind of communication skills. I was very confident around people and in certain situations. But when it came to anything around numbers or a load of information being given to me at once, which happens in school and in lectures and in classrooms, I would just have this massive fear of overwhelmment. And I remember, you know, I went to a very ordinary state school in Portsmouth. And I think because I was a child that didn't disrupt a class, because we had many disruptive children in our class, it was just kind of, well, she's just there and she's kind of getting on with it, so it's fine. But I remember going home and working excessively hard to understand things, getting really overwhelmed, feeling quite alone in my thoughts and how I was interpreting it. And I remember all the time, always looking around the class and thinking, everyone knows what they're doing and I have no idea. And if a spelling test came up and we had to read out loud or anything like that, I didn't know I was suffering with anxiety, but looking back now, it was like severe anxiety. I'd be shaking, trembling, you know, my voice would break. So from someone who was very confident in many areas, it's where I kind of really stood out, where I was very unconfident. And it was never picked up at school for that reason, that I guess I wasn't extremely disruptive. So it kind of just was bypassed. And so I think I spent most of my life feeling unintelligent, but mostly kind of unseen, really. And I think that's what a lot of dyslexics can really struggle with, is not being seen. But because I think I'm quite a dedicated person, you know, I found and navigated my way through it, but through loads of extra hours and many kind of tears, I guess. And so I think for that reason, it was very odd. And I will never forget this, but when I went to sixth form and I was 16 to 18 to do my A-levels, I remember one of my teachers telling me that I was never going to pass my school. And I was going to, and this isn't a detriment to anyone working in any supermarket, but it was because she was like, you're just going to end up working behind a counter somewhere. And she said that to me and it really hit home, that I was like, it was a psychology teacher who obviously knew I wanted to go off and try to achieve something. And that really stuck in my head and it made me basically figure out a way of learning quite quickly. And I think it's because, I don't know, maybe I was slower at processing than others, but I found my way through mind mapping. And so basically it became Rain Man overnight. And you'd walk into my bedroom and I just had kind of A3 posters all over my wall with fantastic. Different colors in it.
Yeah.
And I remember coming home to my mum and saying, look, this teacher really seems to have it in for me and I don't know why, but I'm going to prove her wrong. I need loads of colors and massive pieces of paper. This was all I need. And this is before I was diagnosed or blessed with dyslexia. So yeah, so then that really got me through and I ended up, and this is a weird thing about dyslexia, you end up kind of striving. So I ended up getting one of the top grades in the country. So it kind of went from one end of the spectrum of being like, I'm not going to pass, to kind of surpassing it and really standing out. And I think that really proves to me that actually I am intelligent. I can do this. I just need to figure out my own way of learning. Still to that day, I never knew I was dyslexic. And so I think I always had this massive degree of unconfidence around anything to do with school. And I think if I was probably blessed with it earlier and I knew about it, I might have enjoyed things more because it might have felt more supported and more seen. And then, you know, for many things, my modelling journey has been...
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but what time frame is this? How long ago was this? So
I'm 33 now. So this was... Yeah, this was probably 15 years ago.
15 years ago. Okay, so 15 years ago.
And so, and then it's one of those things where it's very hard, and you know, any kid at that age to figure out what they're going to do. And then I was luckily spotted as a model, and you know, for many faults that modeling had, and kind of, you know, spiraled me out of control in many other areas. And that's a whole other podcast and that story. But it also gave me the gift of understanding also what I was very good at. I was really good at communicating. I was very good and confident in putting kind of situations with people that I didn't know, using my initiative. There were so many other things that actually I shone in, and I did really well in modeling because I guess I just had these certain skill sets that was quite good for that industry. And so actually, I think that was kind of one of my first roots where I actually felt that I was seen and I felt excited and I didn't feel terrified about situations that I was going into. I actually felt like I had all of a sudden leaned into, you know, things that excited me and things that I was good at. And so it was interesting. So I think that was quite a pivotal moment for me. And then obviously I went back to university and went back to studying. And I guess that's when everything kind of resurfaced on actually what's my strengths, what's my weaknesses, and how can I support that. And that's when I was found out I was dyslexic. So it was a very kind of odd journey.
I'm always intrigued by what the wake-up call was, because often the wake-up call is a person, you know, or an interaction with someone, and you wind it back and you realize someone said something or someone did something. And I'm fascinated about what woke you up and got you to actually go and get some sort of dyslexia assessment or whatever. Could you zoom in on that and help us understand what your wake up call was?
Yeah, of course. So kind of a bit of background of why I went back to school. You know, I finished my A-levels and kind of lived many years in New York and Paris and had a really successful career. But at the end of the day, it also gave me extreme habitual burnout. So I was in hospital for months. And I think it really hit me in the face that I hadn't been looking after myself. And so for me, my kind of first step into self-awareness and self-care was, well, okay, I'm currently hugely underweight, you know, my body has shut down on me. I need to go and look after myself. So I'm going to go and study human nutrition. Back then, nutrition wasn't spoken about like it is today. This is going back way over 10 years ago. So I remember my grandmother saying, like, what's nutrition? What would you do there? And so I never really knew about it, but I was like, this is important for me. So I remember calling my parents saying, I'm going to go back to school. My mum's a media, and this makes her sound unsupportive. She's my supportive mother anyone could wish for. But at that time, I was financially very well off and had this, you know, extraordinary lifestyle on the outside. And I said, I'm going to go back to school, mum. And I think there was this panic of like, oh my gosh, are you going to chuck all of this opportunity away? And then I told her I was going to go study science. And I think her immediate reaction was, never been your strong set, science. So, you know, there was that kind of copious barriers of like, well, you know, I've always been told that these things I'm not very good at. And now it's kind of being redefined to me again. And I guess there was a part of me, I don't know what the strong sense of self was, but I was like, I'm going to go and do it. And I am quite a headstrong person. So I went back and I got into a London university to study nutritional science. And I was in the first couple of weeks. And I remember it was quite like a Legally Blonde moment, if I'm honest, like walking in, you know, quite fashionable with like a fluffy pen and sitting down. And that was, everyone's like, you know, what's she doing here? She seems like a sore thumb, a thorn kind of sticking out in this skill set. And I just remember listening to everyone and feeling really out of my depth. You know, people, I've just finished my master's doing this. And I was there going, oh my gosh, I spent 5 years modeling in New York. This feels, you know, we're very disconnected. And then trying to like listen to the professor talk. And I remember her saying, okay, so in 6 weeks, I want everybody to do a presentation on the Krebs cycle and oxidative phosphorylation. But you are going to have to talk about XXXXX. And I remember going, I don't think I've understood anything for the last 4 weeks. I don't know how I'm going to give a presentation. And I walked out in complete sheer panic and just had a complete breakdown and had a full-on panic attack. And I'd never had a panic attack until then. And I'd been put in some of the most extreme situations from the last 5 years of my life. And all of a sudden, having to talk about a biochemical process sent me into a full-blown panic attack. And all I remember was thinking, everything feels like Japanese. Why do I not understand this? Why am I going through this again? For the last 5 years, I feel like I've actually been thriving. And all of a sudden now I feel completely disconnected to everything around me. And so I called my mom and she gave me the worst advice. If you're ever having a panic attack, do not breathe into a brown bag. It makes it worse. So I'm sat outside the school trying to calm myself down, breathing through a brown paper bag. And she just said, look, it's obviously not working for you. I'm just going to speak to a lecturer and say, I need to pull out because I'm really not enjoying this. And so I asked for a meeting with my lecturer. I sat down and I remember, and any dyslexic might relate to this, when you're incredibly overwhelmed, the worst thing to do is ask a dyslexic a question around, you know, a test topic. And I sat down, I just said, I can't do this. I have no idea what you're talking about. And in any of the last 6 weeks of lectures, I'm completely lost. And she said, oh, Sarah, don't worry. Don't be stressed. Let's ask you a simple question. Tell me what an enzyme is. And I just said, I don't know what an enzyme is. Don't test me. And I obviously knew what an enzyme was, but I was in this complete state of overwhelmment that any simple question, I was like, no, don't ask me. I don't know. And I think that moment for her was like, she does know, but I can see something here that's really profound. And I think she saw that I was really struggling. And so she said, have you ever been tested for dyslexia? It was like her first thing that came back as the reaction.
Fantastic.
And I was like, no, why would I be dyslexic? I'm, you know, 23, nearly 24. I've, you know, gone through my whole schooling life. No one's ever saw this in me, even though I felt that I was very different. And she said, will you trust me on this? Will you let me take you for a dyslexic testing? And so 3 weeks later, she said, I really don't want you to drop out. I really believe you've got potential. I just don't think you ever learn how your brain works. So I said, okay. So I called my mom and said, look, they think I might be dyslexic. So 3 weeks later, I sat down and I remember this day so clearly. And I walked in and within like five questions, she just turned around and said, look, we're going to do the 2.5 hour test. But I just want you to know that you are dyslexic before we carry on. I don't. Fantastic. And she just told me within seconds. And then that for me, you know, after that, the support that I had was I had computers, I had audio. She said, you're going to have this recorder, you're going to record everything in sessions. Because what I was struggling with was writing it down, listening to the lecture, answering the questions, it was all too much. Whereas I actually was present and I listened. And then I recorded the lecture. And then I managed to listen to it on the way home and come back and then write it down in colors and amalgamate it into my map. All of a sudden, I was like, oh my gosh, this makes so much sense. And then I would listen to videos and turn them into songs. And, you know, and I got a first and one of the top grades in the country for it. Whereas if she would have never found that out, I would have failed every test, left, never got my degree and felt like a failure. And so like for me, that was such a big moment. And that journey took me on to not only understand more about myself, about how my brain works, but my whole dissertation was around diet and ADHD, dyslexia and neurodisability. So I ended up kind of diving so much deeper, as dyslexics do, into something. And I really wanted to know how I could support myself and also anyone else with dyslexia around diet. So it completely, for me, it wasn't just a pivotal moment for myself, but even then where my work took me after. So yeah, I was very thankful to her for actually seeing and recognizing it rather than kind of just saying, yeah, do you know what? You're not great. You're not going to be great at this. It's not your thing and you should leave.
What's her name?
I was very thankful to her. Her name was Sarah. Sarah Willingham.
Good honor. It was... A shout out to Sarah Willingham. Fantastic.
Yeah, thank you to her.
That is just so, if there's ever a question in someone's mind about, is it worth finding out if I'm dyslexia as an adult? It's a story like that. Absolutely. Even if you're not in university, it's worth finding out if you've got dyslexia or not as an adult. I had a very similar story, and I'd really like to explore the mind mapping thing, because I went to law school, Edinburgh, and when I was in third year of honours, I crashed and burned and had exactly the same kind of conversation with my director of studies, Mr. Cairns. And he said, look, I'm not going to, you want to leave the college, fine, but I'm going to put it down as a pause, not as an end. I'm just going to put your degree on pause. And I said, there's no point putting it on pause. And he says, would you just let me put it on pause, please? And I was like, no, I'm just leaving. I'm done. I'm finished. I can't do this anymore, even though I was a top student. And thankfully, he put it on pause, because a year and a half later, I came back and I said, by the way, is it possible for me to finish my last year? And he says, absolutely. Come in next month. No problem. Start where you left off. And that's when I learned how to mind map in my third year of law school.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my goodness, I could actually listen and mind map. And I wasn't furiously taking notes. I was just, I would listen, take a key word, listen, take another key word, etc. And it was only until I went to university the second time, when I was 35, that I got identified with dyslexia. And when the assessor said, these are some of the things you need to be doing, like mind mapping, I was like, well, I've been doing it for the last 15 years.
And she said,
well,
that's to me.
That's why you managed to become a primary school teacher and lecture and do the next thing, the mind mapping. So I'm interested about the mind mapping side of things. What did your assessor say when you said that you mind mapped?
I mean, it was interesting, right? Because I don't know if they did an IQ test on you at the same time, but they did to me and kind of said, you have a really good IQ. So I think you basically managed to figure out your own strategies which work for you. But my mind mapping came into place when I was 16, when I remember sitting in psychology and them saying, okay, you've got 500 studies to learn and you need to learn every single reference. And I was going, oh my gosh, how am I going to learn every reference? How am I going to remember every study and every reference and then cite it in my test? And so for me, it was about how can I make this quite fun and into mind mapping? And so that's how I did it. And my brain would then go into the mind map in the exam. And I would then walk around the mind map in my exam. And it was all these moments is when I was excelling. Whereas if I didn't have that tool, I don't think I would have really passed any of my exams. Yeah. And so for me, like colors and mind mapping was so important, because if you give me a whole load of text, I can't distribute that in my brain. And even now with our podcast team, they're incredible and they're so good at linear thinking and they make these amazing protocols. But for me as a dyslexic, I look at it and it's an incredible structure. But for me, I cannot absorb it. And so I have to redistribute it in my own way. Like even my calendar is in different colors, depending on what I'm doing and who I'm meeting. If there are meetings, they're in one color. If they're virtual, they're another color. If it's personal, it's in another color. And so everything for me is around segmenting it into chunkable sizes that are in different colors. And I think that's where mind mapping to me is insanely powerful. The only thing that they gave me different when I was diagnosed with, blessed with dyslexia, I've really got to work on this, blessed with dyslexia, was that they gave me a mind mapping tool for my computer. And that was quite interesting as well. So I can then kind of have two different ways to mind map. But honestly believe like every single person who has any type of neurodisability, it's about what works for you. Because I don't know if you felt this, but I think there's so many things around, oh, well, this will work for you. And then if it doesn't, you automatically feel that shame. And so someone might be listening to this and going, well, I don't understand my mapping, or my mapping doesn't work for me. And I'm like, do you know what? That's great. You figured out what doesn't work for you. Let's try and figure out what does work for you. Because I think there was loads of things that I've kind of read over the years that's really good for dyslexia. And I'm like, oh, I don't resonate with that. Or, oh, that doesn't work for me. And so I really advocate for people to lean into what works for them. And if they haven't found it yet, to try and explore something new every time they're learning, or, you know, with their daily routine. Because I think for me, routine is the number one thing I have to do as a dyslexic. It's really important for me to have a routine. Otherwise, I get very overwhelmed. So having structure is one of my things I have to work really hard on. Not that I enjoy it, but I have to work on it to basically make me feel more in control. Yeah. Otherwise, I can feel very out of control. So it's kind of finding out what works for you.
Great. So, before we move on, you were talking about mind mapping. And just for listeners, you described mind mapping as mind mapping by hand. Okay. Yeah. As your default, but you didn't make it explicit, because often people, when they think about mind mapping, they think about computer mind mapping. Mm. I love computer mind mapping. I also love mind mapping by hand. And some people have an adverse reaction to computer mind mapping because it just doesn't resonate with them. Whereas mapping by hand, if they're taught right, then they're like, oh, I like this, because they're kind of processing it. Do you like doing doodles in your maps? Drawings? Do you sketch and so on?
I don't sketch, but my doodles, it's going to sound really weird. I don't sketch, but when I mind map, it's not like an ordinary rectangle or square. It's like different bubbles, different shapes. And so each shape will resonate with something else. And they're random, but it's however I feel at the time. So I can be like, okay, I'll have a bubble here, then I'll have a cloud here, then I'll have a star here. And that's how I put my information into the bubbles.
Yeah.
And they're then in different colors. And it's because I definitely need structurally something visually to separate, because I think things for me can blend very easily. So if I have different shapes and different colors and different sizes, I can look at something quite quickly and intake the information. If it's given to me in one block color where all of the blocks are the same and they're all going the same way, then I'll just look at it and I won't intake it very quickly. So for me, it's all about how can I visually make this kind of each section different and stand out and resonate.
So we've found out what life was like before. We've heard your wake up call. And as usual, it was a person who said something, and that moment, like, do you think you might be dyslexic? And, you know, if you ever wonder whether or not you should maybe say to someone, do you think you might be dyslexic? You err on the side of caution and say it, because you might be the third person who said it, and they might say, actually, I think I might need to take this seriously, you know? And we had a guest on who had their tax investigator say to them, do you think you might be dyslexic? And it was actually the tax man.
Well, gosh, that gives me anxiety.
We'll put it in the show notes, because what she did was
complete anxiety.
I'm sorry, Sarah.
My biggest anxiety is tax. Yes. An accountant. So if I can imagine that poor person having probably a breakdown.
So she got pulled in by the tax man, right? The tax man, lady in this case, looked at her accounts and sat with her and looked at her accounts. And then the Pamela is her name. We'll put the link in the show notes. Pamela said, had been so diligent running her business and doing her own books and so on. And she looked at the books and she said, Pamela, have you ever considered that you might be dyslexic? And she says, well, I don't know. What do you mean? She's like in her 50s at the time. And she says, well, it looks to me like you might be dyslexic by looking at these books. And if you went away and got your dyslexia test done, we could deal with this a little bit differently. And she did. She got it done. She got identified. And then the tax man said, look, looking at these books, I can see you've gone through this process and you've made some mistakes here that were unintentional, but look like they're intentional. But I can see if you're a dyslexic person, why you might do this, because mm-hmm. you've missed some steps in the process. And so she was given grace by the tax man. Isn't that incredible?
I mean, I honestly believe if any tax man has listened to this, please be really kind on dyslexics, because I had a call with my accountant yesterday and I was like, I'm in tears every time I speak to him, because I think there's I think there's something, and it's not because, you know, I really want to do everything by the book correctly, but I inherently don't understand numbers very well. And I find it very overwhelming. And it's why I have to work. My poor accountant probably is like, gosh, we should explain this to Sarah again. But for me, there's something about numbers that just completely spins me out. And there's a specific word for it. And I don't know why. Whoever's made the wording for dyslexia or any, why is it so difficult?
It's dyscalculia.
Why is it not easy?
Dyscalculia. Yeah.
It's like, I talked to him yesterday. I was like, I think I've got dyscalculia. I couldn't say it. I was like, there's a word that's afraid of numbers, and I think I have that, but I can't tell you what it is because they've made it so hard to pronounce. And I'm like, why is it made it so difficult?
Yeah.
Why is it not easy?
They start off with dyslexia, making dyslexia hard to say, and
which I still can't spell.
Yes. And then it's dyscalculia. But the other thing is that there's dyscalculia, which is the processing numbers, and dyslexia is processing words.
Yeah.
And then there's dysgraphia, processing movements on the pen. Have you heard of that?
Oh, wow. No.
Okay.
I didn't know what that was.
Dysgraphia. So that is difficulty writing, graphics. Okay. And then there's dyspraxia. And that's difficulty moving, with movement and coordination, bumping into things, etc.
Yeah, they tested me for that in my test. I didn't have that one.
Yes. And they're often very co-occurrent, you have one as well as the other. So there's quite a lot of these disses, you know?
I wish they just make it easy spelling. Yes. I just don't know why they made it so.
Yes.
I mean, at least ADHD. I mean, I know it's a short one, but it's quite easy to pronounce ADHD. And that's somebody who's got hyperactivity. But then they give dyslexia like the hardest spelling in the world for someone who's kind of word blind. Why would you do that?
Yes. It's cruelty, isn't it? So where were we? So dyscalculia, back to the tax person. But I sometimes think, I know working with some of my clients, that often the issue with the accounts and the numbers isn't necessarily the number, because accounting involves adding and subtracting and things like that, which is not hard in itself. It's the difficulty with the process.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the key things. This is a processing difference. We process information differently and often not sequentially, often in a sort of simultaneous processing. I like to see the big picture. I like to see all the key words of the mind map all at once and dot around it. And you're simultaneously processing rather than sequentially processing. When it comes to accounts, you're sequentially processing. And it takes so much mental process to go through that sequencing. Yeah.
I mean, it's really reminded me of the story of when I was blessed with dyslexia. So the person who was giving me the test at the end, when they went through everything with me, I will remember this. And I remember bursting into tears because it was the first time I felt like somebody understood my brain and I didn't understand it. So it was really nice for someone to say, this is what's happening in your brain. And so she gave me this really beautiful analogy where she said, okay, so if somebody who's quite a linear thinking, which is how the schooling system is set up for people to learn, which is a large majority of the population, if you're trying to make spaghetti bolognese or a pasta sauce, say, you're going to go in, you're going to go, right, what do I need? I need some pasta, I need some basil, I need some tomato sauce, I need an onion and some garlic, and you're going to check out. That's a linear person's thinking. It's very straight. Whereas somebody who's got dyslexia, they will go in and go, okay, right, I'm going to make a pasta sauce. I'm going to get some pasta, but then I might try and make the sauce. So what do I need to make? Okay, so I might need some tomatoes, and then I might need some nuts, but then I might also need this. And then but maybe some salt. And then what about this? And then you basically just start, your brain starts going out and out and out and out.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you kind of lost what you're thinking about. You've already started picking something else up, and you've got an amalgamation of like 25 different recipes and ingredients going on at the same time. Yeah. And then you kind of get to the end, you're like, that was exhausting. And I'm like, that's my brain. That's how I work every time I go into the shop.
Yes, yes.
And it was really nice for her to explain that to me and for me to go, okay, well, that's how my brain works. So it was just, it's very interesting.
Another level to add on, layer to add on to that analogy is, let's say that person has made the pasta sauce 10 times already, and they've shopped for it 10 times already. They will go into the shop and they'll go, all right, tomatoes, this, that, next. They'll go on to autopilot. They're just dun, 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 dun. Dyslexia, there's no autopilot for that. It's back to intentionally thinking about what's next. And it's this level of intentional thinking that our brains are hardwired to do with dyslexia. It's like we have been denied the autopilot that linear thinkers often get into as a sequence. We've been denied that. So it forces us to constantly intentionally think about the next step in the process. And what it means is we come up with really great developments of the process, if we remember them afterwards, like a new ingredient, new recipe, a new thing, because we're hardwired not to get stuck in a groove. We're hardwired to creatively adapt and constantly dynamically adapt to circumstances, which has its advantages in a creative, dynamic environment and huge disadvantages when it's in a very linear, systematic environment.
Yeah, I mean, that's why kind of like 40% of dyslexics are entrepreneurs, right? It's because we have this like out of the box thinking. Yeah. And it was really odd because I remember when I started getting called an entrepreneur a few years ago and I felt really uncomfortable with it. I was like, oh gosh, this feels really very on me, you know? But now I've realized that that is what I am. Everything I've curated has been solely by myself, or whatever I've made has been from my own passion and a thought process of, well, I'm going to do it. And I don't know how I'm going to do it. I've got no structure in how I've made what I've made, but it's just kind of happened. And it's been this like very unlinear journey. And organic. I always am feeling very organic, but I think the things with dyslexic is you'll always find a way. It's like a completely outside of the box way of thinking.
Yeah.
And so if I, you know, I know that you're going through like lots of interesting developments at the moment, and I'm sure with whatever you're going to go on to go and do in the next stage of what you're creating, is creating these depths or creating these like specific ways of thinking is quite difficult for a dyslexic, because sometimes you're like, I kind of feel like I'm going to get there. It's just maybe not the linear way on how to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, if I would have created a business plan 5 years ago, it wouldn't have looked like how it is today.
Yes.
And it's kind of been this really interesting journey of how I've got there. Whereas many kind of founders or entrepreneurs might have a strict, rigid business plan, which actually is how you're meant to do it. But for a dyslexic, it doesn't always work that way. And so, well, I always kind of say,
is it how you're meant to do it? No, I don't know if it really is. I mean, if we're
I guess you're meant to like oversee.
Really do a business plan. I mean, when you speak to them, right, what they do is.
But all the ones I met did.
What?
All the ones I met did.
Oh, did you?
I was random anomaly that was just like, okay, we've got to have more structure here.
I don't think you're that random, actually. I was just speaking to, I'm going to do a podcast soon with Incubator Hub for social entrepreneurs. And they're going to look into, you know, how do we teach entrepreneurs with dyslexia in a dyslexia friendly way? Not in that, oh, we're going to put up or audio, but how do you actually turn the whole way of doing this entrepreneurial journey into a way that fits with dyslexia? And often that journey is an iterative journey. You go do something, you reflect on it, you adjust, you do something, you reflect on it, which is much. Have you heard of the business model canvas, which is a way of doing a business plan on one page visually?
No, I've heard of Canva, but not Canvas.
It's called the Business Model Canvas. It's really cool.
Interesting.
And they do that. But anyway, we're kind of going off on tangent here. This is really great. I really
so dyslexic.
Get to,
I love it.
Yeah, it is. This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com, which helps you organize yourself creatively with a productivity system for Apple devices. I want to hear about the diet and dyslexia. Tell us a little bit about that. What are your thoughts on, as a nutritionist, on diet and dyslexia? Is there anything we can do with diet to help with the effects, boost the benefits and deal with the disadvantages of dyslexia?
Absolutely. When I first started, I never forget there was this one lecture that we had in biochemistry, which spoke about our brain structure and spoke about how certain people with dyslexia or ADHD or any neurotype of disability may have lower levels of omega-3s, fatty acids in their brain than others. And so obviously I heard that and I then spiraled into, well, I need to know everything about this. And that basically became my dissertation. And I basically looked at all the meta-analysis. So when you look at scientific research, you have kind of a pyramid of rankings of studies, and you have like observational, which is you observe maybe different countries, very epidemiological data, and you can't really get a causation. You can't really get something very specific because there's so many different confounding variables that are happening. You know, it could be due to smoking or high stress. You can't kind of zone in on one area of why that change has happened. We can start seeing associations. So you can start seeing, okay, well, this population has high levels of X compared to this population, but you can't really say why. And then you kind of go down to different types of trials. And then you have random control trials, which is actually when you take a group of participants and put them into a room and try and closely study them. Very hard to do in nutrition, as you can imagine, because you don't tend to lock somebody in a room for a week and try and study them. So again, you're trying to look at all other kind of confounding variables. But then when you get to meta-analysis, basically what that does, it looks at all of these random control trials. And it actually tries to look at actually what is significant. What do all of the research in this area that have been closely regulated and monitored say? And so for me, I really wanted to look at dyslexia and ADHD. And there's this amazing Dr. Alex Richardson. She's a Oxford University lecturer. And she has kind of pioneered her whole work and research into dyslexia. And so I went to go and watch her speak. And she was like, so many young adults today aren't eating oily fish, and this is where we get our omega-3. Now, what if we actually changed their dietary guidelines and gave them 2 to 3 portions of oily fish a week? How would this impact their dyslexia, their reading disabilities, their processing disabilities? And she started finding really interesting correlations where actually if you fed children more oily fish in a week, they actually overcame their chronic reading age. And I was like, my gosh, this is really interesting. So I went off and read some more research. And then for young kids, we know that when they're giving oily fish, actually it really helps support their dyslexia. If they don't have that, they want to have supplementation. It's still inconclusive. Some studies show that it is beneficial. Some studies show that it's not beneficial, but it's not going to be harmful. Okay. It's anti-inflammatory anyway, and it is a really important component of the brain. So I would say to supplement if they're not having oily fish. And then as an adult, you know, we want to be eating 2 to 3 portions of oily fish a week. Our public health guidelines only say 1 portion of oily fish. I believe that you need to be having more than that. So trying to include that as much as you can, if you can, from sustainable sources, but if not, just try to get that oily fish in your diet. And if not, supplementing it. And if you're someone who's a vegan, so you're listening to this and going, well, I don't resonate with any of this, I can't eat oily fish, then how oily fish actually gets that DHA, which is that really important part in our cell membrane that makes up 25%, they get it from algae. So the fish eat the algae, and that then becomes the omega-3 fatty acid. So if you are a vegan, then have an algae supplement. It can be just as beneficial. Again, supplement trials are really hard to draw a conclusion from because there's so many different supplements out there. There's so many different levels of supplements. But if you're looking at omega-3, trying to have more DHA, then EPA is really, really important for dyslexia anyway. Obviously, omega-3 is involved in many other things such as anti-inflammatory, you know, your joints, arthritis and things. But if you're specifically looking for dyslexia and neurodisability, then actually DHA is what we want to be getting. And if we're not having it, just to give people some context, you know, our bodies are super smart. They it needs to be filtered again. So what it would do is your body would go, oh, well, I'll just grab another fat because there's not any DHA around. So I'll grab some cholesterol and I'll pop it in my cell membrane, but it becomes much more of a rigid structure. So that's why it's really important. It does need to be. The reason why it's essential is because we have to include it in our diet. That's why it's called an essential fatty acid. We can't make this within our body. So we have to include it into our diet. So if we don't, then it will be clever. It will grab other types of fats like cholesterol, but it just won't be as effective. So I really believe that diet plays a massive part, not only in, you know, anything with ADHD, dyslexia or neurodivergent people, but in kind of your mental health overall as well. So yeah, it's kind of a very short explanation on the importance of omega-3 fatty acids among so many other things that are important. But that for me is where I really kind of shine a spotlight on.
Fascinating. I've never heard that before. Although I've heard people talking about the beneficial effects of omega-3, but never really directly linked it to helping with dyslexia. For people who are taking it as adults, say, for example, mm-hmm. like me, if I took more omega-3 mm-hmm. and I've got dyslexia, how would it affect me if I took omega-3? What's the sort of effects? What are the beneficial effects?
So what is really important to caveat in any type of nutritional research, which is really, really important, is that just because evidence and research sometimes maybe not a fully conclusive answer, but shows a significant p-value, which means that there is some relatability into you taking a supplement to having a Y effect, doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to work for every single person. That is really important to state. And we are all so individual. So our own gut microbiome and our own bodies will use these nutrients differently. So that is one just really important thing to start off with. I don't want anyone to be listening to this and thinking, okay, if I take omega-3 tomorrow or next month, my dyslexia is going to be dramatically improved. But what we do know is that some studies show that one, if you have an omega-3 deficiency, so say maybe you're not having any oily fish or your body's just not processing it effectively. Again, if you're taking a supplement and you've got IBD or IBS, it may not be working for you anyway because you might not be gaining it efficiently from the supplement. But if you took it, you might see an effect. I would say first off, you see more of an effect from eating fish itself than a supplement, but you might help with your processing. It might help with your reading abilities. It might help with your brain just working a little bit more efficiently in those processes. You would have to look at your own individual account of that. So you would have to take it for 3 months, eat oily fish maybe for 3 months, and see if it's helping your processing speeds anymore. We see it a lot more dramatically in children. A lot of the trials that I looked at in adults, it's 50-50. So some it worked for, some it didn't, but a lot was in their processing speeds and in their reading abilities. I have, since researching this, since 23, been having oily fish every single week and haven't gone back. But I think that's because I got so far down into looking at this that for me, I felt it was very beneficial. And I kind of used myself as my own study on that. But again, I had totally overhauled my whole diet. So it wasn't just omega-3. For me, I really honed in on the gut microbiome. That's a really important link with our gut health. It's our second brain. You know, all of our neurotransmitters and neuromodulators that are serotonin, dopamine, all of these things, they're all made within our gut. And so all of these things are really important to hone in on, looking at our gut health, trying to remove ultra processed foods. And so again, to kind of caveat this whole conversation, by you simply having omega-3 in your diet, but living predominantly on processed foods, you probably aren't going to see a huge difference. If you're trying to actually remove those ultra processed foods, have more whole foods, include more fatty fish in your diet, you might actually see a really beneficial improvement. The one thing I'd say is for anyone introducing oily fish, it's not toxic, it's not a hindrance, it's not anything that's going to be really detrimental to you. So it's something that is really kind of good to try and see how that works.
Basically, there's no downside is what you're saying. Yeah,
exactly.
Fascinating, fascinating. And we'll put some links in the description below for all of the things that you shared, including your podcast. Let's think about the next steps. What have you got? Anything else you want to share or plans you've got in the future? We've talked about learning about your identifying it and the benefits you've got. What have been the benefits you would say that you've got from being dyslexic? You know, what are the advantages?
Yeah, it's really interesting because as you mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, you said I've only been speaking about this for 6 months to a year, and I have been for the reason that, you know, I kind of never really kind of talked about my dyslexia, one from a stigma point of view, two, because I didn't really know anyone else around me who had dyslexia. So I couldn't really resonate, couldn't really talk to anyone about it because they were really kind of unsure where I was coming from. And it's not until I started using my platform to speak about it that I started realizing, oh my gosh, there's so many people that this resonates with, or that this could help, or, you know, maybe somebody's on their journey and whatever I say could support them, or, you know, make them be seen and heard. And so I think one of my real advantages was, one is, although my processing speed might be slow in some areas, I'm very quick at executive functioning in others, but I can go through tasks very, very quickly and be very efficient. And I feel like that I can do that a lot quicker than other people on certain areas. I think I'm a really good communicator, and probably exactly like you, and while you've done a podcast and, you know, you mentioned that you're a primary teacher, like all of those things are so important to be a good communicator and also a good empath, you know, somebody who kind of feels others' feelings and connects with people. And I think that's something that really shines out for people that I know who are dyslexic. And I think that's something that I get my energy from, but I also love. So I love speaking to new people. I feel like I listen to them and can empathize with them quite a lot. And I think that's quite a big skill in many areas of today. So I'd say that is something that I do feel that is a big skill of mine. That has kind of got me to where I am, is that communicator. And I'm sure it's very similar for you. The reason why, you know, your podcast has done so well is that because you can communicate and empathize with people. And that is so key for any podcast host. So yeah, I kind of say, I think they're my kind of standout skills.
So where can people find out more about you, Sarah?
So I would say I'm very active on Instagram. So my handle is my name, Sarah Ann Macklin. I have a website, again, my name, sarahannmacklin.com, where you can find like a host of information. I have recipes on there. I have expert blogs. So we have kind of a huge amount of people that contribute to that. It's called the Wisdom Wellbeing Vault. I have a weekly dose of mental nourishment newsletter. So it's kind of all different things that happened in my week, where I do sometimes speak about dyslexia, brain bites, interesting studies that have come out. So again, anything, if you're somebody who is fascinated on this area of health, then I'll share with you the latest science. And then the podcast is shared on there too, and any events that I'm doing. So I'd say definitely sign up to that, and you can keep up to date with everything I've got coming out. And again, the podcast is called Live Well, Be Well, and it launches, I'm not sure when this is coming out, but it launches on May the 17th. So we'll be with you then for the next kind of 4 months on our season. So yeah, definitely check that out.
Sarah, thank you very much. And we'll put all of those links in the description below.
Thank you so much for having me.
This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com. It's my day job when I'm not hosting this podcast. Tell me, do you know what you want to achieve in the workplace, but you're struggling with how to achieve it? Maybe you suspect some traits of dyslexia are getting in the way. Well, that's where Dyslexia Productivity Coaching comes in, because we give you a simple productivity system for your Apple devices that harnesses the creativity that comes with your dyslexia. It includes proven methods like note-taking, reminders, speech-to-text, mind mapping, and more, all tailored to your needs. It'll free up your time and help you achieve outstanding results. Book a complimentary call to discuss it with me, and if you do it soon, I may also be available to coach you personally via Zoom. So don't be shy, go to dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com or swipe up and book it now.